The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This week, we're going to look at a story that we've been following for some time, the war on people who use drugs currently raging in the Philippines. Loyal listeners will recall that the Philippines has, for the last several years, been home to a very bloody war on people who use drugs, with thousands of people being murdered by police in and out of uniform. The Philippines has had a presidential election. The dictator who began the murderous drug war campaign, Rodrigo Duterte, did not run for re-election. The new president of the Philippines is Bongbong Marcos, the son of former Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. This is not an improvement. My good friend David Borden is the executive director of DRCNet and StopTheDrugWar.org. On Thursday, July 14th, Dave moderated a panel on the Philippines that was held as a parallel event to the UN's recent high-level political forum on sustainable development. The panel was entitled, Building Back with Justice, Marcos, Duterte, the ICC, and the Philippine Drug War. Here's Dave.
This is our 12th event at or in conjunction with international meetings on the topic of human rights in the Philippines. We are holding this event at the margins, the online margins of the UN's high-level political forum on sustainable development, a massive world effort to address the world's great challenges. One of the goals, number 16, is peace, justice, and strong institutions. And so issues like human rights, accountability, and so forth fall within that topic. Our first event was held in March 2017 at the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, where we were privileged to present a video from then Vice President Lenny Robredo, a video which became controversial in the Philippines due to attacks being made on her by political opponents. Vice President Robredo was in her first year of her term as vice president, having narrowly defeated Bongbong Marcos to win that post. As probably everyone here is well aware, Marcos is now the president, having defeated Robredo. And we will discuss, as part of our discussion today, we will touch on the ramifications of that. I will also, before turning this over to my co-moderator, Marco Perduca, I will just lastly note that it's nearly 5.5 years since then-Senator Lila de Lima was first jailed. And we share the widespread hopes in the international community that she will be released soon, particularly since I think it is three of her initial key accusers have recanted their accusations and stated that they were made under pressure.
That was David Borden, executive director of DRCNet and StopTheDrugWar.org. He was introducing a panel entitled Building Back with Justice, Marcos, Duterte, the ICC, and the Philippine Drug War, which was held as a parallel event to the UN's recent high-level political forum on sustainable development. Marco Perduca is a former Italian senator who served on the Foreign Affairs, Justice, and Human Rights Committees. For 20 years, he's coordinated the activities of the Nonviolent Radical Party at the United Nations in New York, Geneva, and Vienna, and has organized high-level meetings to abolish the death penalty in Africa and Central Asia.
July 17 marks the International Day for Justice, or Criminal Justice. The 17th of July, 1998, it was the conclusion of the diplomatic conference of plenipotentiary that took place in Rome to adopt the statute of the International Criminal Court. I was there, so for once we can have someone that witnessed not only that day, but also the 4 years that led to the finalization of that document. The idea of having an international criminal court was floated around when the United Nations were founded in the mid-40s, but gained traction in the late 80s when the president of Trinidad and Tobago went before the General Assembly to urge the international community to establish an international court, criminal court, in particular to take care of all the possible crimes, narco-trafficking, so the trafficking of illicit narcotics. The idea was duly noted, but not expanded or developed until, unfortunately, the events in the Balkans and in the Great Lake regions also called for international justice, super partes international justice to come in whenever violations of international humanitarian law were occurring. It is also thanks to the Italian government and my former organization, the Radical Party, and the proactive work of Emma Bonino, who at that time was member of the Italian Parliament and eventually in 1995 became European Commissioner for Humanitarian Aid, that the Italian government offered to host the conference in Rome, paying for all the costs that that would have entailed. And Rome is a seat of the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and for 5 weeks, diplomats coming from all over the world met to come at the compromise solution, which wasn't liked by many groups, non-governmental organizations included. But we thought that if we couldn't take that opportunity to finally come at the conclusion of a very long debate, it would have the entire idea of having international justice would have not have been at hand anymore. And if we look at the world of 1998, the type of governments in Europe, the United States, but I would also say Australia, New Zealand, and to a certain extent, the Caribbeans and Egypt, for that matter, because they were all in a way or another involved in finalizing the document. And we look at the world as it was after 9/11. I think it was a good decision to conclude the conference there and not have an encore in a couple of years as they did for the landmine treaties. The core crimes of the current International Criminal Court are genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. 10 years ago, also the crime of aggression was included as a core crime, and we are now witnessing a war of aggression of Russia against Ukraine. And so if Russia had recognized the competence of the court, and also the Ukraine had done so in the past, and in fact, partly they did after Crimea was annexed illegally by Russia, that court could have jurisdiction over it. So to recap, the court has jurisdiction over countries that have signed and ratified or have acceded the treaty, and in a way have put in place all the necessary measures to collaborate with the court or allow the court to take action if local authorities are unwilling or unable to pursue alleged criminals at any level of the state hierarchy, from the top, meaning the president of the republic, down to the chain of command that has ordered or not done enough to block violations of international humanitarian law. Since the event that Dave reminded before of 2017, we have made the case before competent authorities, the ICC included, that the way in which the war on drugs had been waged in the Philippines amounted to crimes against humanity. It was massive and systematic. And it was the result of a specific order gave by someone in charge of doing possibly the opposite. That is, not only to protect their civilians from abuse of national authorities or the police or the army, but also to try and provide assistance in case of addiction. The United Nations has changed its stance when it comes to drug policy or the international system of drug control, and now they're always including the need to provide human rights-centered or humane treatment of people when it comes to take care of illicit trafficking or use of those substances. Unfortunately, for at least the last 3 years, we have seen inhuman and degrading treatment of people that take drugs in the Philippines, and also the people that wanted to criticize the way in which those campaigns have been going on. So we know, and with this I will conclude, that the Philippines was party to the treaty until a few years ago. So some of those heinous actions still fall under the jurisdiction of the ICC. jurisdiction has opened an investigation. There are currently, the ICC has taken care of 31 cases. Some are still ongoing. Some have been acquitted. Some have been convicted. Some are of the responsible are still at large. What I think we will hear today is a recap of how things have happened in a way or haven't happened in another way when it came to the Philippines, because it is important to remind that without the proactive work of non-governmental organizations, the ICC will not be there. It will still be a good idea that were technically possible, but politically never pursued because there was not enough will here and there to arrive at the political conclusion.
That was Marco Perduca, a former Italian senator who for 20 years has coordinated the activities of the Nonviolent Radical Party at the United Nations in New York, Geneva, and Vienna. He spoke recently on a panel entitled Building Back with Justice, Marcos Duterte, the ICC, and the Philippine Drug War, which was held as a parallel event to the UN's recent high-level political forum on sustainable development. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Here's human rights activist Justin Belain.
I'm going to share about the state of the killings under the final months of Duterte and the government's failure to investigate all of these. I'm going to start first with recounting that at the first half of the year, during the campaign season, the streets were blaring with the jingle of the new president, vice president, which started with the lines, Bagong Pilipinas, Bagong Mukha. It roughly translates to new Philippines and new faces, but in reality, it's not. In the first half month under Marcos and Duterte, we're being shown of the same drug war tactics and the same level of government repression. So for tonight, I'll be talking about how the killings haven't stopped with Duterte leaving and how late with him later gone, and how the killings have largely remained uninvestigated and the killers let loose under Duterte and possibly Marcos. So we start first with how the killings have continued unabated, even in Duterte's final months in office. Data from the University of the Philippines Third World Studies Center showed that there have been 155 deaths for the first half of the year. And even in Duterte's final years in office, the killing of children in the drug war has continued. As a cruel farewell reminder, the drug war killed 38 people, including 2 children, in the last month of Duterte in Malacañang. It can be remembered that 2 years ago, the Human Rights Watch has reported that more than 122 children have already been killed under the drug war. In UP's research, from January to July 2022, 68 of the deaths were carried out by state agents. And this is one of the highest tally among assailants in the University of the Philippines research. There's also, I'm relying and I'm citing on the University of the Philippines data because there's a huge underreporting crisis on drug war numbers that even the government itself has lost itself in its web of legalese and, dare I say, deception. This year, before Duterte left office, the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency reported that there has been a total of 6,248 drug war deaths since Duterte took office. This is a figure that is at least 24,000 lower than the estimates of the Philippine Commission on Human Rights and other human rights groups. And this is even lower than the figure provided by the Office of Duterte. In 2017, remember that the presidential office may have admitted itself that the drug war killed 20,000 people and listed it as one of his annual accomplishment report under the section Fighting Illegal Drugs in 2017. And this case and this accomplishment report by the Office of Duterte became the basis of the Supreme Court order to the Duterte government to explain and release data on the 20,000 deaths, which could be state-sponsored. And so later on, the government submitted data that a news site, Rappler, called rubbish. It described that the file submitted to them were irrelevant or there were already missing cases that could have involved killings during state operations. Last year, when I spoke in the same side event, I reported that the Philippine Department of Justice vowed to the international community that they are able and that they are willing to conduct a domestic review on the drug war cases just to show that the justice system is still working in the country. But this year, the Department of Justice announced to the United Nations that only four cases have led to actual new prosecution. Imagine that, four cases out of more than 30,000 reported or suspected cases under the drug war. I think that's showing that this government is being non-committal and not being serious about its obligations to the international community and upholding its human rights obligations. Because to date, there remains only one case that led to a guilty verdict against Killer Cops, and that was in 2018 on the murder of 17-year-old Kian De Los Santos. That's because the norm is of acquitting and letting Killer Cops go scot-free. Last month, the Office of the President dismissed charges against Colonel Lito Patay. He's the station head in a city here in Metro Manila whose team was accused of killing a 17-year-old boy in one of the slum areas here in Metro Manila. So you see, the prospects of investigation and bringing to justice the cases and the killings that have happened under the Duterte administration remain bleak. Now, what are the prospects under the Marcos administration? A week into Bongbong Marcos's presidency, one person a day is killed, approximately. This is according to data from the Third World Study Center of UP. And you can also note that an official of the Marcos government vowed that a drug war will be as intensive as before. Even the president, Marcos himself, during the campaign trail, said that he will continue the drug war with the same vigor but a different approach. But we continue to question the government's seriousness to put into law any program that is an alternative to what the law enforcement agencies have already been accustomed to under Duterte, because they've already been so comfortable with getting away with their crimes that it can be remembered that as early as 2017, Senator Riz Hontiveros of Akbayan already filed a bill in Senate providing the framework for a public health approach on the drug problem. But until now, there has been no push from others in the Senate or anyone else in the legislative chambers or the executive to pass it or to adopt elements of it even, highlighting the importance of harm reduction instead of the current punitive, violent, and largely failed approach of the Duterte administration. After the elections, we spoke with Nanette Castillo, who lost his only son, 20-year-old Aldrin Castillo, in 2017. And she said she felt dismayed with the election results and with Marcos winning, because she knows that the new government will not listen to them, who are victims of extrajudicial killings. And this is significant because Marcos Jr., who sits in the office of the president, refuses to be accountable for the extrajudicial killings that have happened under his family's regime in the 70s. So what more with the previous governments?
That was Justin Belain, a Filipino human rights activist, speaking on a panel entitled Building Back with Justice, Marcos Duterte, the ICC, and the Philippine Drug War, which was held as a parallel event to the UN's recent high-level political forum on sustainable development. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now here's Ruben Carranza with the International Center for Transitional Justice.
I'm glad that Justin laid out the context of the drug war as it is. And it's important to note that the drug war is not over. And for those of you who watch American television, there's this famous quote from The Wire, that TV series about drug wars, that drug wars are not actual wars because drug wars never end. And that's the situation in the Philippines right now. On the first day of Ferdinand Marcos Jr. as president, which was also the last day of Rodrigo Duterte as president, there were two there were drug war killings in the University of the Philippines inside its campus involving these two brothers who were very poor, coming from a very poor family. Regine Cabato of the Washington Post included their killing in her story about the continuity of the drug war under Marcos Jr. The brothers were invited by a supposed friend to help fix a car, but instead they were taken by plainclothes armed men in a car that was unmarked and taken from the university, and then their bodies were found 2 days later. Very poor family from one of the urban poor communities that have settled inside the University of the Philippines campus. I mentioned this example because many, many years ago, when I was a student at the University of the Philippines, after the Marcos dictatorship, an unmarked car bearing armed men actually abducted one of the staffers of the campus newspaper, the student newspaper I was editing at that time. And he was fortunately found much later, detained in a police camp, charged with being part of a killing of U.S. servicemen, and eventually convicted and imprisoned. He has been released. But I mention this example because the continuation of the drug war isn't, in many ways, isn't contingent on who the president is now. Part of what the drug war unleashed, part of what Duterte unleashed, has been the creation of a national death squad that has now come to exist apart from Duterte himself. And so it's important to mention this because I don't think we can reckon with accountability for the drug war based on who the president of the Philippines is. It's important to look at the institutions that enforce the drug war, both the formal state institutions, the Philippine National Police, and the non-institutional and yet much more powerful creations that the drug war has led to. A death squad that used to be local, Davao City, has become national under Duterte, and this national death squad continues. In the same story that appeared in the Washington Post, there's mention of a press conference held by the current chief of the Philippine National Police, Vicente Danao, saying that these two brothers who were supposedly killed by the police in a shootout had 68 million pesos worth of street-level shabu, a drug, with them when they were killed. Vicente Danao, the current police chief, was Duterte's former police chief in Danao, in Davao City. And Vicente Danao has a record, not just of being involved in the drug wars in Davao, but also of domestic abuse for which he was exposed by his wife and had to take a leave from his police duties in Davao until Duterte, of course, forgave him and then said he will back him up. And this is how he has been backed up. Vicente Danao is likely to be one of those that, if the prosecutor goes ahead with the investigation that has already been authorized previously by the pretrial chambers of the ICC, pretrial chamber of the ICC, and the prosecutor now wants to issue, Vicente Danao is likely to be one of those to be investigated. It's difficult to say at this point whether Vicente Danao or anyone else, for that matter, will be charged. But obviously, those who have been linked to the death squad in Davao and now operate on a national scale are likely to be those who will be investigated and potentially charged. This isn't only because of their links to the death squads in Davao and then nationwide. This is also because the ICC prosecutor, with the approval of the pretrial chamber, has actually extended the coverage of that investigation of the Philippines drug war to to the period when Duterte was mayor of Davao. In other words, after the ICC treaty took effect for the Philippines in 2011, and years before Rodrigo Duterte became president. It's interesting as well that in this period covered by the ICC prosecutor's investigation of the Philippine drug war, Rodrigo Duterte was mayor, but there were periods. There's a period, if I'm not mistaken, in which his daughter was mayor of Davao because they took turns becoming mayor. So this is important to remember that the prosecutor extended the coverage of the investigation to prior to the presidency of Rodrigo Duterte. But there's two other points that I'd like to mention here. It's important to remember as well that the International Criminal Court is not the only institution that can pursue accountability for the drug war. It's important to remember that prosecution is not the only measure by which extrajudicial killings, crimes against humanity committed in the drug war can be pursued and and those behind them be held accountable. Justice doesn't only equate with courts. It's important to remember that justice can be pursued elsewhere, outside courts. And I've emphasized this in the work that ICTJ does in transitional justice. Because here we have a transition from Duterte to Marcos. Is there hope for a transitional justice process for the drug war, even if Marcos Jr. has indicated that he will continue, according to him at least, most of what has happened under Duterte? There are two ways in which I think the accountability and justice for the drug war can be pursued even outside of the International Criminal Court's process. One is through a truth-telling process that can be organized at the local level, perhaps at the community level in the Philippines, among the urban poor communities that have been targeted by the drug war. Part of that work is being done now by priests like my friend Father Fabi Villanueva, and the exhumations and the reburials and cremations of those whose bodies were buried in cemeteries, whose families cannot afford to keep those bodies and pay for the burial plots. So that process of removing the remains, and then having my friend as well, one of the forensic pathologists in the Philippines, Dr. Raquel Fortun, exhume and examine the bodies, conduct autopsies, is a truth-telling process. It's important to support that. It's important for the international community to support that, because this not only empowers communities, empowers families of the victims into acting on their demands for justice, but gives them some hope that even if there's no formal state process that seeks accountability within the Philippines, even if the ICC prosecutor will take longer to actually investigate, conduct the investigation, and even if that investigation happens and the ICC as a court cannot proceed because the Philippines does not cooperate with the ICC, that there are local processes going on outside of court processes.
That was Ruben Carranza with the International Center for Transitional Justice speaking on a panel entitled Building Back with Justice, Marcos Duterte, the ICC, and the Philippine Drug War. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now,
the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.